Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, May 28th. I'm Ray Graff. Today's show, it's the Copyright Forum, and joining us today, Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. They're here to answer your questions at protecting your writing, your music, your art. They've already been discussing the topic, and they are full of it today, even more so than usual. If you have a question about copyright law or what's in the public domain, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you wish, you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Paul, Polly, Bill, your copyright calls are coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today's show, it's the Copyright Forum, and to answer your questions, we have our usual great panel in the studio. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and wrote a column for the late lamented Metroland. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. And you wanted to find surreal? Listening to Paul and Bill discuss American Idol before the show is certainly in that ballpark. But you know who didn't engage in the conversation? Polly Law, that's who. Polly is a past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She is a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, along with Provincetown and Nantucket, Massachusetts. Paul, Bill, Polly, welcome back.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Nice to have you all here. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a copyright question. 800-348-2551. Or you can tweet us, right? People tweet now. You can tweet us at WAMCVoxPop. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Before we get started with the business at hand, and that's not American Idol, you two.
No.
So that
just
all right. Polly, you got some shows coming up.
Yeah. I currently have a show in Rhinebeck at Albert Shahinian Fine Art, and it has been extended until June 23rd. And I have a show opening this Saturday from 4 to 6 at the Roxbury Arts Group in Roxbury, New York.
Nice. Well, that's very good.
Very good.
Thank you.
What's new with you fellas?
Not much.
I got nothing.
No? All right. Well, let's just go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Jay in Great Barrington. Jay, you're on.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
Hey, Jay.
Thanks for taking my call. So I'm trying to create some new music technology that is a concept that isn't in the market right now, but will be created with components that do exist on the market, mainly electronical components available through websites that sell, you know, little kind of DIY kits and things like that. So I haven't landed on a final concept and, you know, full design yet, but I'm just trying to figure out the right balance of, like, when I do, but it consists of things that you're able to purchase through sites, like hobby sites, as I mentioned, what's the right point to get a patent or a novel idea locked down, or what type of IP should I be trying to secure once I do land on the configuration that works?
You're definitely talking about patent law, and none of us here are patent lawyers. That's a whole separate specialty.
Well,
from...
we better get one for the next show.
But we had one in here once,
that's
and
he true.
Was great.
Yeah.
But he was really fun. And unlike most patent lawyers, he was really fun.
But, ooh, little patent okay. lawyer but, joke there for you, Jay. Drive
but,
safely.
You know, there's...
Yeah, I'm a Flander lawyer now.
There's a couple of patent lawyers in the Berkshires, and there's a number of really, really good patent law firms in Albany. And I think, you know, at some point when you think you're getting close, you should consult with one of them and find out, you know, how close you really are, and they'll be able to tell you.
All right, Jay, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum, Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp here to answer your questions. We go to Chris in New Paltz. Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am about to bring a product to market that involves the use of the logos and product names of a large manufacturer. I have already secured legal permission in writing to use these logos and names.
Whoa.
But I'm going to be using them in a unique way, and I'm trying to find out if there's any way that I can copyright or protect the way that I'm doing it so someone else doesn't copy my idea and take it.
Probably not, because yeah. What you're talking about is an idea or a method. I'm if you could tell me more about it, which you don't want to do, because
top secret.
I could tell you whether there was a shot at getting a patent, but it to me it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like you're just trying to protect a process or an idea. I mean, and what I tell my clients is, you know, what you need to do is brand it. You know, give it a snappy name and get the trademark for it.
Yeah.
And get it to market before everybody else, you know, and you'll be then known as the original, and you know the rest will be known as copycats.
That's just what I was thinking, is that I have secured a domain name mm-hmm. for it. I do have a name for what I'm going to be calling it, and that was part of my intention, was to present it as, you know, sort of the original and best.
Yeah. I mean, there was that hot sauce that I can never pronounce.
Sriracha.
Yeah. There's the guy that made the sriracha that you see in all the restaurants, and he never bothered to get a trademark for sriracha. And he said, because I want people to copy me, because I'm going to be the original and everybody's going to know it. So you can go and get store brand sriracha all the time. But, you know, if you want to look like a cheapskate, you know.
Which is what I did the other day, as a matter of fact. Thank you for validating me. Chris, you have a follow up.
No, thank you. You've answered exactly the question that I needed answered, and I thank you.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
It's the Copyright Forum on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Bill Westwood is here. Polly Law is here. I'm Paul Rapp. And now we go over to Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Jim.
Yeah, hi. My question involves a streaming copyright for radio stations. I'm a faculty advisor for a college non-commercial station, and we pay Sound Exchange a fee every year to stream. And part of that regulation is that we can't play a certain number of songs or a certain number of artists in a three-hour period. It's a little bit complicated. We don't want to get into that. What I'm asking is, I've been told that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting gets a blanket exemption or whatever. And sorry, Ray, but WAMC runs a Grateful Dead hour on Sunday nights, and obviously that's more than four songs in a three-hour period by the same artist. So Corporation for Public Broadcasting have an exemption to Sound Exchange?
I don't know what the maybe you know, Paul. I don't know what the
No idea. Sound Exchange has that restriction, huh? That's weird.
I've always found it kind of strange, but
that's really a throwback to when, you know, people on FM DJs would play entire albums.
You know,
and everybody would sit there with their cassette recorder and grab
indeed,
it.
Yes, indeed. Back in the day, yes.
But it really doesn't. It doesn't count with streaming anymore, or you know, even with radio. I mean, it's kind of nuts.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no, for terrestrial signal, there's no such thing, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, for streaming, there is.
Well, I mean, you're not going to have Sound Exchange isn't going to come up to, you know, North Adams and monitor what you're doing. So
probably not. Yeah.
Well, good luck, Jim. Thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum today, and we'll take one more here before our first break. Kurt in Troy. Kurt, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Hey.
Sure.
I wanted to ask if images that are posted on Instagram, are they protected by copyright, or are they then available for anybody to use for any purposes?
They're protected by copyright.
Yeah.
Everything out there like that is protected by copyright. And
so you don't have any so then using a high quality image or low resolution image, no difference there in terms of your protection. You should be theoretically protected by copyright there.
Yeah, correct.
Correct.
Obviously, you're better protected if the work, if you're the creator, if the work is registered, but it's protected regardless.
Yeah, we were just talking about a case where some government, local government agency, grabbed some photographer's picture off of Flickr and started using it to promote
tourism.
Yeah. You know, and they claimed it was fair use, and you know. It wasn't. You know, that's a commercial use, just like everything else. It took the guy, the trial court judge got it wrong, but the appeals court got it right. Just because something's on the internet doesn't mean it's up
free.
For grabs.
Okay. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Kurt, thanks for the call. It's the Copyright Forum. Paul Rapp is here, Bill Westwood at Poly Law. If you have a copyright question, now's the time to call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Hello again. It's Vox Pop. It's the Copyright Forum. 20 minutes after 2 o'clock. It's Tuesday. Feels like a Monday to many of us, but, you know, I worked yesterday, so I'm sure all of you on the panel were relaxing. Some of us were broadcasting. And Zach, too, right? Yeah, sure. You were around. The number here is 800, but enough complaining. But I got this rash. 800-348-2551 is the number. And now let's go over to Russell. Russell in Clifton Park. You're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and everybody who's there. Ladies, too.
Okay.
Thank you.
I currently hold a registered trademark for my company name and website name. However, I have a term or a logo that goes with it. And I've used it for a good 10 years now, but I haven't trademarked it's the saying to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
If I've been using it for 10 years, do I still need to trademark it? Or I guess is that a safety issue or something to protect it over the years? Or is just using it for 10 years protect me already?
Have you used it on the internet, or is it just a local kind of business?
Well, I'm a New York-based company. I do serve three states, but it is on the internet, and it is below the company name.
Yeah, I mean, a tagline can be trademarked. I mean, have it your way, which was who? Mm-hmm. Burger King? I know. I mean, they got that. So, yeah, you can register the tagline, and it might not be, but the problem is that you said you're in a three-state area. You've already got really good common law rights in those three states. And, if somebody started using, even if you registered the mark with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, if somebody started using the tagline in California, you might not be able to stop them if you're not doing any business in California. So I think you're probably fine, right? The way you've got it. I think you've got, after, 10 years of notorious use in this fairly large geographic area, I think you're good to go.
And one more last question before I let you go. As I mentioned, the company name is trademark, registered trademark.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody took my physical company name and literally reversed the two words that are in it, is that an infringement?
Are they offering the same service?
Yes.
Yeah, I have seen the Patent and Trademark Office and the courts go both ways on that. It's if it. It depends on the two words and how they're juxtaposed. It's fine. I just had this issue this morning with a client. If they leave a similar commercial impression,
impression.
If it's going to be something that's likely to confuse a consumer, you'd be able to stop them. I think in most cases you'll be able to stop them.
And that's the right answer.
Yeah, that was a hat.
That was the bell. That's right. Bonus points. thank you very much. All right, let's move on. And over to Bill in Hudson.
Let's go
Bill.
To the bonus round.
Yeah.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So as a follow-up to the last question, I am starting a small business, and I want to use a tagline in a foreign language. But I also want to use the tagline onto I want to put the tagline on products. So would A, do I need to copyright that tagline in a foreign language? And B, because it's going onto product that would be sold nationally and internationally, how would a copyright work for that?
You would register it as a trademark.
Yeah,
it's not a
copyright issue.
Right, it would be a trademark, and you can trademark something in a foreign language, and they'll ask you on the registration what it's what it is translated, and check it. Okay. I mean, this is always my biggest fear when I'm getting a trademark of some English word, and then I find out that somebody's already registered the Portuguese equivalent, and that knocks me out of the I mean, that's because how do you search for that? I mean, you go through every you go through every language.
A lot of languages.
But yeah, you can register the trademark to that. And you're talking about international business. Trademark is very territorial. So depending on where you go internationally, you may want to go and get registrations around the world.
But he needs to check to make sure that the phrase is not already used by another company.
You do. You have to do a search. I mean, do a Google search of, the American, the English translation.
As well as the foreign language translation.
Got it. Oh, very interesting. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. Our number here is 800-348-2551. So that means when Coca-Cola wants to make sure that it's trademarked in, Zimbabwe or whatever, they have to send a representative, grease the palms, do the paperwork?
You can do most of it online. Most countries you can do online. But it can get expensive. I mean, it's $1,000 to $1,500 to do it in the U.S. And then, you're talking about the EU and it's another couple thousand there. And then, it's just to get worldwide coverage, it can be really expensive.
Obviously, Coca-Cola doesn't worry about
that. They got a couple of bucks.
But, but a small company, would have.
Go ahead.
Would have some significant cost involved.
Is China as bad an actor in trademarks as it is in copyright?
Yes, unless your last name is Trump.
That's another show.
All right.
Let's go to Kay in the Berkshires. Kay, you're on.
Hi. I've written many short stories in one novel, and I want to get some information on what's my next move.
Have you registered the copyrights on those pieces?
No.
Well, that's your next
move.
That's
your first step.
Yeah.
Okay.
would be to register the copyright with copyright.gov.
Have any of these pieces been published yet?
No.
Okay.
Nobody's seen them except for two people.
So when she has a novel and it's 400 pages, you're not going to upload that, right? You have to send a hard... Really?
Yeah.
Well,
you send
it as a
PDF.
Go ahead,
Kay. Really want to do it in book form.
You send them? As I recall, this panel is a little skeptical about the actual sending of things nowadays.
Yeah, they're not demanding physical deposits anymore.
Right.
Particularly for things that are unpublished.
Right.
Publications, sometimes they want them, which drives me nuts because then you have to go to the post office.
But what if Kay typed this with a typewriter? Then she would have to go through all that extra step of scanning all those pages.
Right. Oh,
yes, she would.
That is correct.
But if you put them all into one book, that would technically be
one manuscript, not one book.
It would be a collection. Yeah. Registered as a collection.
The novel and the short stories together?
Sure.
As a group registration.
Okay.
Although they've just changed the regs where I think it's a maximum of 10 works. But if you're talking about a book of short stories, that alone could be a collection, and you could have more than 10.
There you go.
But the directions on the copyright.gov are pretty clear and will help you understand how to do things. And then the actual process of registering online is not so clear.
Have a glass of wine and sit there and spend the evening.
You mean they haven't improved it in all these years?
No.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Be sure that you you use Firefox and not Google or some other.
Why?
Or Safari.
Because Firefox is what they prefer. And I was just helping somebody the other day, and they were using a different browser, and they couldn't get the work registered.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
I use Safari, and I've never had a problem.
Well,
okay. But they do have that warning, and I'm like...
Yeah, Firefox works better.
So anyway, Kay, that should help you in the right direction. Thank you for the call. It's the Copyright Forum on WAMC. Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, Polly Law, all here to answer your questions about your intellectual property. And now time for Les in New Paltz. Les.
Yeah, hi. This is a follow-up question for the about Instagram.
Yeah.
There was the artist Richard Prince who was allowed to use other people's images.
Yeah.
What happened with that court case? I followed it, and then I just lost track of it. I'm going to listen on the radio now. Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot.
The one you're probably talking about, the Carrieu case with the Rasta guy, where Richard Prince went and like put blue splotches and Stratocasters on this photographer's photographs of Rasta guys. It went to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. I was just talking to the attorney that represented Prince, who's local. And the court did a split decision. I mean, there were like 35 works involved of Prince's, and they said 30 of them were fair use, and they said 5 of them weren't, and sent them back down to the district court. But they didn't apply. There was like almost no reasoning. There was almost no. They like talked about what fair use was, and then said we've decided these 30 are, but they didn't say why.
Well, so subjectively decided.
Well, yeah, they said they were transformative, and therefore they were fair use.
Right.
Yeah. And transformative, you would think, would really require some changes, but the guy just put blue splotches on these images, and it caused a great furor among visual creators.
All right.
But the blue splotch makers were really happy.
Oh, the blue splotch makers.
The paint guys.
They're delighted.
Just, yeah.
Let's go to Joanne in Albany. Joanne.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've been working on a short story that's based on a famous short story from 1895, and I've been kind of making it more contemporary, changing the character from male to female. And I wanted to know, you know, is there any legal restrictions for what I'm doing if I want to publish it at some point?
Not until, you know, until recently there was, but then that was shot down.
Yeah, you don't have a problem. The work's in the public domain, and you can do whatever you want. You can even just print it word for word and put vampires in the story, and people have done that with Jane Eyre books.
It's
you know.
Sure.
Jane Austen.
Jane Austen.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck. Thank you very much for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. Patrick in Beech Lake, Pennsylvania. You're on.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. My question is, like, say I wanted to do, like, a Who Framed Roger Rabbit-esque movie, but with My Little Pony Friendship is Magic characters.
Oh, boy.
Like, who would I have to get permission from it, and is it even possible to get permission to use My Little Pony?
Well, you'd have to contact the company that owns My Little Pony. Poor Ray is having
check,
that
please. That's it. My career is now over.
Yeah, I mean, My Little Pony is an extremely valuable media property. And I think the likelihood that you, unless it's an out-and-out parody.
Right.
And parody's okay?
Parody's okay.
But it has to be a parody of both My Little Pony and Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
If you could sell the idea to Pixar or some other high-powered animation company.
Won't they just steal the idea, though?
Yes, they will.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah, that's true.
No, I mean...
Oh, yeah, there's that.
And it would have to be very clearly a parody to keep you out of court.
Yeah.
And even then, you'll probably wind up in court.
And even then, you might wind up in court if they felt that it was really taking money out of their pockets.
Out of their corporate pockets.
Out of their corporate pockets.
Wow. Patrick, this is a how'd you come up with this one?
Well, you know, it just sort of came to me, like, after I saw My Little Pony Equestria Girls. Yeah. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. And,
no.
I thought not. Yeah, I saw Equestria Girls, and I've seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and I wanted to combine the idea, you know?
Well, I got to say, I don't know if you can get the copyright, but I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, so, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, and it would be a comedy, you know. There would be plenty of fourth wall breaking jokes, but not to the point where it becomes lazy like some movies are.
Right. Well, that's good. I mean, hey, listen, you got a plan, and if you lawyer this to death, you might make it happen. Patrick, thanks for the call. The number's 800-348-2551. 1-800-348.
Clearly, the guy's got daughters, right? And this is
right.
This
you can
right.
hear them.
Because, yeah,
because
at some point I'm going, I didn't know weed was legal in Pennsylvania.
Well,
it might be both conditions are present.
But it was clearly the thing that comes to you when you're taking your little daughters to the movies.
Yeah.
Right.
And trying to keep your sanity.
After movie number 700. Yeah, believe me, I got four daughters. I know the drill.
Yeah,
believe me,
yeah.
I've come up with worse ideas than that. And. not much, but Bill in Western Mass. Bill, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My wife and I started a farm in 1975 here in Massachusetts. We gave it a name that actually we had been using previously when we were up in Vermont. But we never trademarked or copyrighted the name. We built the business. It has a recognizable brand now. And we are wondering, is there... There are other farms, in fact, all over the country that carry the same name.
Right.
And so the question is, A, is it possible to trademark or copyright it, proving we've had it in commercial use for 43, almost 44 years, or not?
Lots of conditions apply.
Yeah, I mean, you can. But again, like I told the earlier person, that it's really still only going to protect you in the geographic area that you operate in and any natural zone of expansion of that. And you kind of already have that from 40 years of use. You've got common law use. And and like you said, there's other farms, a bunch of other farms around the country. It could well be somebody's already registered the trademark.
Right.
And so, you know, I think... You know, save the $1,000 and just you know rely on your common law brand.
Yeah. Have you Googled the name and seen what comes up as far as product goes and you know trademarked?
I believe we are the only farm with this name that is selling the product that we make and package. Which is maple syrup. I don't believe there are any other maple farms using that name.
Okay. Well, that helps.
Well, okay. This is fine though. I guess so. It's sort of like a common law marriage. We have used it in commerce for so long, and so we don't have any real ironclad protection. But it's probably not worth it to spend the money to. But would it be a trademark or a copyright?
A trademark.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
Now, okay.
Okay, well, great.
I have a question.
Ahead.
Well, hang on, Bill.
okay. This is more for Paul and Bill. If, say, someone else comes up with a maple syrup product and uses the same name, would his protection be that he could probably prove that they've been using that name for 40 years?
Yes.
That would help.
Okay. That would be the big ka-ching moment.
Yes.
Okay. And it would take some ka-ching to put that through the courts, though, right? And
that's where I come in.
So Paul drives his sports car. Let's take a break.
Paul Rapp at paulrapp.com.
800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Oh, boy, I tell you what, My Little Pony and Fritz the Cat and whatever. We'll be back. with Booker T and the MGs here on Vox Pop. 239 coming up on 240 on your Tuesday afternoon. Ray Graff with you. It's a Vox Pop copyright forum. We have Paul Rapp here, Bill Westwood, and Polly Law. And let's go over to my buddy Roger in Warwick, New York. Roger, you're on.
Hey, Ray Graff. Roger from Warwick. How are you?
How you doing, buddy?
All right. Hey, I have, and you don't know this, I have an ongoing trademark registration dispute. I've been doing business under a given name for 12 years. And, you know, as the thought of potential sale of the business come to mind, I thought, geez, I should register the trademark so that we have a brand. We built consumer electronics. And you want to register the brand. So, you know, we had incorporated when we first started business. We didn't have a problem incorporating in New York. There was no contest over the name. When we went to the PTO, they said, oh, there's a similar Rogers British brand. Okay. Now, the British brand has been defunct for at least 25 years. Okay. But the trademark was purchased by the Chinese. Okay, and they continued to keep the registration code, even though they made no product and they do no commerce, and absolutely not in the U.S.
Hmm.
So we've been pursuing getting them to release that. They've never tried to enforce their trademark rights with me over the 12-year period, and they know us. I mean, we advertise. You know, the industry knows who we are. And my question is, am I spending money, the right money, defending this? You know, we've even tried to reach an agreement with them where we isolated particular products within the brand, and they haven't been willing to release that. And we can't seem to get them to want to sell it or negotiate it all.
Wow. Huh. I mean, have you started a cancellation proceeding at the PTO?
We have. I mean, and it's going back and forth. They defend the cancellation. They have a big, they have a San Francisco intellectual properties attorney, apparently a big name in the industry, defending it.
But, you know, if they're not using it in the United States, it's subject to being declared abandoned.
It's been decades since it was an English company, right, Roger?
And you said the mark was sold to the Chinese. I mean, it sounds like it's an abandoned mark, and it would be subject to a cancellation proceeding, and then they would have to prove, with evidence that they're using it.
And they're fabricating evidence. You know, they're fabricating invoices and things like that. But we've built up in our industry, things are done through distributors, so we've gotten distributors to testify that, hey, there's no commerce in the U.S. We can't buy this product in the U.S., but it's costing me money to continue this road.
Well,
and as long as they don't try to enforce their copyrights, why should I, or their trademark rights, why should I continue to fight this battle?
I guess you don't have to unless their continuing use, you know, of the mark is causing you harm. Maybe it's just not worth it. I mean, if you're doing fine and they're not enforcing their trademark, which they probably don't want to do because it'll snap back and hit them in the face. You know, maybe you're just throwing good money after bad by continuing to try to cancel their trademark if you're doing fine.
So and they couldn't. I think that the case law is latches. They can't in the future try to sell product under that name and then retroactively reinforce their rights.
Well, if they own a valid trademark, they can start selling goods again anytime they want.
But how long do they have to? They can hold that trademark and not sell anything. How long do they have?
Not very long. I mean,
it'll become invalid if they don't.
You know, you have to show them proof at the beginning after 6 years, and then after that, every 10 years after that, you have to show them proof that you're actually using the mark in commerce in the United States.
That would be abandoned otherwise.
So, assuming my information is accurate that I'm providing you, you're saying that it's there's not a lot of defense to it. It's just that we've got to get them to that point.
Yeah.
To where the PTO says, yeah, we agree, it's been abandoned.
Right. Right.
All right. Hey, Roger, we got to move it along, bud. But thanks very much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Stephen in Albany. Stephen, you're on.
Hi. I'm starting a most interesting nationwide veteran-owned and veteran-operated business, and I want to protect the name. Mm-hmm. I believe that would be a trademark.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
And how would I go about such? I'm a retired farmer.
Mm-hmm.
I can weld, fly airplanes, and deliver to all my children at home, but I don't want to learn how to do this on my own.
Yeah,
how would I find a trademark attorney that I don't have to learn one more thing in life?
Well, I've had a number of clients, you know, successfully get their own trademarks, but I've had many more call me, you know, after their attempt to do it themselves.
Why is it so difficult?
It's a nuanced. It's a nuanced thing, and a lot of times the trademark office will come back and want you to change some things. And they use technical language if you don't know, you know,
right,
what they're talking about.
It's much more complicated than registering
a
copyright.
Yeah. Stephen is in the Albany area. There are several in the Albany area, right?
Yes, there are.
All right,
including Paul.
Well, he's on the other side of the.
Well, I'm licensed.
Are
in,
you?
In New York? Yeah.
Okay, see that you are.
so yeah, that's. Did he go?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that's so basically you'll find people in the region who
right.
can do that for you.
You know, yes. and LegalZoom, I know there are underwriters here, but you know, I've heard people had horrible experiences
okay.
with them.
Well, they'll be suing us next. Thank you.
Yeah, if you're gonna work with an attorney, work with somebody that knows what they're doing.
Fair enough. All right, let's go to Jackie in Lake Katrine. Jackie, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about my dad was a writer. He passed away about 30 years ago, but my mom more recently, and going through the family effects, I found some manuscripts which were never published. I'd like to make them available on the internet or as ebooks, not necessarily for purchase. Do I need to do anything to copyright them?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you should register them.
If you're going to let them go, even on a non-commercial basis, if you're going to put them out in the world, why not register it? I mean, you understand the estate of your father owns the copyrights as it is, but you get much better protection if you register with the Copyright Office. And these are unpublished works, and so they will continue viability until, 70 years after your father's death, so you've still got another 30 or 40 years,
yeah.
You know.
All right, Jackie, thanks so much. And now over to Al in Albany. Al.
Hi, everyone. The better part of 20 years, I wrote a weekly column in a local arts and entertainment newspaper. I never allowed them to print my column online, to add it to their online newspaper. And I retained the copyright on them all, and there are hundreds of these things. My friends have asked me to put them up online or make them available. I'd like to put them on a WordPress site. The only thing is I want to protect them against being taken and used, monetized by somebody else. So I guess that's the first part of the question. How do I do that? Do I have to register anything? And second, if I have hundreds of these things, do I have to register hundreds of them?
Yeah.
They're all published.
Is this Al Q, by the way?
It is.
You could have just called me, man.
Oh, well, I'll be darned.
But the problem is they've all been published, and so you would have to register each one at a time.
But if they've all been published in the same journal, in the same magazine or newspaper, couldn't that be considered a serial?
Possibly.
You're asking me?
Yeah,
no. We're asking each other.
Stay out of the sound, will you?
But he's now going to republish them, and you have every right to do that. I mean, you own the copyrights to the work.
But the key is, Al, you got to register them, and you know therein lies the rub, because it's $55 per online registration.
Per well, 35 because it's one author and one work, unless you do them
can
10 at a time.
Them all as one work?
Yeah, do an anthology, right?
You, you could.
Maybe. They might let you get away with that. I would have to look into that. Give me a call.
Oh, that's nice. Thanks, Al. We appreciate it. And now to Ben in Albany. Ben.
Hey, guys, thank you for taking my call. It's a really neat idea for a program. I have just a quick question. It's a matter of kind of what direction I need to go. I have an idea for a product that I want to bring to market, but I'm not interested in selling it on my own. I actually want to license it to a company that sells internationally. Do I need a copyright or do I need a patent?
Patent.
You need a patent and you need a non-disclosure agreement.
Right.
A non-disclosure agreement, because really you're talking about an idea, and if you haven't really perfected the idea, you might not be able to get a patent. Mm. You've got something that's not really protected by any theory other than private contract, which is where a non-disclosure agreement comes in. It's a document that says, you know, I'm going to show you, you know, big international company, my idea, and if you decide you want to use it, you know, we've got to negotiate. And they will agree to that.
Gotcha.
For a patent, you need documentation of the actual invention.
But patents are freely searchable, though, are they not?
Yeah.
Yeah, once it's registered, yeah.
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 Okay.
But, yeah, you've got, Polly's absolutely right. You've got to meticulously document from a perspective of time, date, you know, what in any kind of art you create relative
specs
to it.
Specs for it.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Diagrams.
And then you got to deal with the patent lawyer.
And then you've got to deal with a patent attorney. So
poor thing.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. I just wasn't sure which direction I needed to go.
Yeah. So,
thanks.
Thanks, Ben. Over to David and Colony. David.
Hi. How you doing? My question refers to wills and revenue generated by copyrighted material posthumously. Is it a good idea to have any specific language a will related to earnings after you're gone?
Absolutely.
Or is it just part of the estate, basically?
Absolutely. And also the transfer of copyright, even though arguably if you if you're the recipient, if a parent has passed away and you now own those copyrights, but it helps, I think, like any other contractual matter, to have specific language that says that I, Dad, am transferring these rights to you, or you are transferring these rights to your children or whatever.
To specific children,
sure.
You know, and one thing,
if
there's a lot of kids involved, there's a good chance they don't always get along on everything. And oftentimes it's really smart to just appoint one of the kids to be the literary or artistic, you know, IP executor, or even a third party that you trust,
right,
and say, you know, you will make all the decisions, the commercial decisions for this portfolio of works. And then, you know, after you take a percentage for your administration fee, then, he will direct you to, spread the money around the heirs, by certain percentages. But, you know, I've seen an awful lot of worthwhile estates of creative works just come to a grinding halt because you've got five kids who can't agree on what to do, and it just it becomes awful.
Right, and it just doesn't just become part of the general estate if there's nothing specific in there. It's good to have something specific in there.
It's good to have something specific
in there.
It's
always better to have.
Yeah, arguably it would become part of the general estate, but again, if nobody knows those copyrights exist, if nobody knows what, for example, you wanted to happen to those copyrights, you know, you wanted them exploited, monetized, and monies to go to.
Well, you know, what if, you know, the rights are not specified to one executor, and then a movie company comes calling, and you've got five different people arguing about how much they should get for the rights.
So be specific. I guess that's the bottom line.
All right, David, thanks a lot. Now we jump over to Schenectady and Nick. Nick, you're on.
Yeah, hi. A friend of mine in the early 60s took pictures of Bob Dylan and John Lee Hooker down in the Village, and he gave me the pictures to put online. And we sold about 5 or 10 pairs of these very old Dylan pictures. But he passed away. He's dead now, and I still have the pictures. Am I still allowed to sell these pictures online and to people now that he's passed away? It does say copyright on the back with his name on the back of the picture.
But he basically gave you a license to sell them.
Yeah, they're physical photographs.
Did he give you a license? Did he give you a license?
He gave me the pictures because he didn't want to bother with the, you know, the computer stuff. And
but did he give you something in writing that says that?
No. He was just a good friend of mine. Yeah. He took back in the 60s. He took pictures of Dylan at Gertie's Folk City. And
yeah, it doesn't have to be in writing.
I still have the pictures.
Yeah, I'd say you're good to go. I mean, you're not going to want to put the picture. You're not going to want to put the picture on t-shirts and teacups and stuff like that.
No,
like
no,
that.
I just want to see if you're selling. Can I still put them on eBay?
You're selling prints.
Can I still
prints,
put them on eBay and? Sure. I can still put them on eBay and sell them because we already sold about 10 pairs, so they could already people could already make copies of them if they wanted to. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You're not selling copies, though. You're selling the original prints, are you?
I'm selling the ones that he gave me from his archives.
Yeah, okay. But you're not making reproductions from the negatives and selling those.
No. Well, can I do that?
No.
No.
I don't think so.
That gets tricky.
It
is tricky because I got the prints, you know, the 8x10s. Can I just make copies of the 8x10s and sell them? Now that he's dead?
Did he leave any heirs?
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. Yeah. I don't know what happened to his estate.
I would say don't go nuts, don't make big posters. But you know, I mean, this is part of history here, and your friend was part of it, and he entrusted you to look over it.
They're wonderful pictures of Dylan and Emily Hooker.
And it's not like you're getting fabulously rich doing this. You're doing this out of
All right, Nick. Thanks a lot. We only have a minute or two here. Let's go to Larry in Water Valley. Larry, you're on.
Hi, I'm an old geezer songwriter, and I've got about 200 copyrighted songs. I'm not anticipating being around much longer, and I was thinking of simplifying my life by dumping all those songs into the public domain.
Okay.
Is there an easy way to do that?
Easy way to go public domain.
And are they up online, or...
Are they recorded?
Are they recorded?
Yes.
Okay.
Some of them albums, none of them were ever a hit, but they were on albums that had hit songs on them.
All right, we're almost out of time here, so.
I mean, the easiest thing to do, I think, and it's not exactly easy, but, you know, post them all online with a Creative Commons license. And
just say, go to town.
Yeah, these are now in the public domain as far as I'm concerned.
All right, a quick email here. This one actually came in via Twitter. I'm a lecturer at a local university where we have been dealing with students uploading exams to various websites. We've been told to add the copyright symbol on our exams. How will that help fight the problem?
They can't claim ignorance.
They can't claim ignorance, and the site they're posting to can't claim ignorance either because there's a copyright notice on the work. So, I mean, that's the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, unfortunately, that doesn't help. I've had many of my illustrations posted on those websites with my copyright
notice.
But
it gives you recourse.
I don't think it would give you much... I don't think it would help much.
I forgot about whiteout.
We're done here. Thanks to the panel. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from Studio KTM Organic Hair Salon, featuring individual attention in a private environment with cutter and colorist Kristen Marquette using Natulique organic products. StudioKTM.com. Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving all the Berkshires, Pioneer Valley, and all of Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve announcing an opportunity to engage in community science by bird watching with a team on June 1st from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. AlbanyPineBush.org. And Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing assisted living, transitional care, rehabilitation therapy, and respite long-term and palliative care for seniors, daughtersofsarah.org. Thanks again to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for being here today. Great calls, as always, even the one about My Little Pony. I thought that was fascinating. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Chekai answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we'll discuss military and veterans issues with members of the New York National Guard and veteran organization Soldier On. Right now, stand by for the book show.